The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. This is Richard Palmer standing in for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Flurry, coming to you from a, well, at least dry, if not sunny, Edstone, England. Well, as usual, there's been a whole lot going on in the news. Busy time of year just for the work, for the church, but busy time of year in the news as well. As many of you know, we were off yesterday. I think we would have had a recording slotted in for this show then, keeping the Day of Atonement, a holy day described both in the Old and New Testament of your Bible. But yes, so our offices were closed, but you know, I still got quite a few breaking news alerts through on my phone with some very significant news events. I'll start with some of those from yesterday before giving you a Brexit update, and then talking to you about an important bit of news from this time last week that hasn't really gotten much attention, certainly not in the mainstream news and in the cable news networks. I don't think it's been mentioned at all, but still something of great significance. Well, I'll start with a news event that was buzzing in through yesterday. Two people killed and two injured in an attack on a synagogue in Germany, in the city of Halle, in the state of Saxony-Anhalt. And I'll just read to you from Deutsche Welle. They wrote, an attack on a synagogue in eastern Germany, in the eastern German city of Halle, in the state of Saxony-Anhalt, sent shockwaves across the country on Wednesday. They arrested a 27-year-old man, Stefan B., but it looks like he was there at a synagogue on Yom Kippur, on probably the holiest day for the Jews, or the most important holy day there, and they're all gathered in the synagogue, and this man turned up with a gun, with an improvised explosive device, and he killed two people. I think he wounded two others, and it was, there was the potential there for this to have been much, much worse. He was coming there prepared to kill many, many more. The shooting occurred shortly after 1 p.m. And he tried to get in the synagogue, but the Jews worshipping in there, they managed to barricade the door, and he couldn't get in. And then he shot and killed a woman near the entrance of the Jewish cemetery that was next to the synagogue. He then drove to a nearby kebab shop where he killed a second person. I think it was a Turkish kebab shop. And the police said they found an improvised explosive device near the synagogue. And then two more people were injured. And so they said, I think it's a man and a woman are being treated now for gunshot wounds, but they're not. The police don't think that they're going to die. But one of the people who was there at the synagogue said, today I feel a lot more somber because people were killed. Yesterday was more about just being thankful for the miracle that the gunman couldn't get through the door and that a much bigger tragedy didn't happen. The shooter, he was live streaming it, I think, on the Amazon kind of gaming platform Twitch, trying to gain attention for this horrible atrocity that he was carrying out there. One of the articles talked about how multiple technical failures saved lives. He had multiple weapons, homemade bombs, a homemade rifle. This article, I think this was from Deutsche Welle, that said he experienced repeated technical failures during the attack, which ultimately saved lives. A man who stopped his vehicle to check on the woman who was shot outside the synagogue was able to get away unharmed when the shooter's weapon failed to fire. It jammed again after he began firing at the kebab shop. Several people were able to flee. In the live stream of the attack, the assailant apologizes to the viewers repeatedly for his failure to kill. So just a horrible attack. Like I said, he obviously planned and was capable, if everything had worked, of killing many more people if his bombs had gone off properly and his guns, but thankfully they didn't. Unfortunately, though, this type of attack is becoming increasingly more common. It's starting to get to the point where an attack like this on a synagogue where Jews are getting killed, it's not that unusual in Europe. In fact, one of the local Jewish figures in the community. He said it's scandalous that the police were not protecting the synagogue in Halle on a holiday like Yom Kippur. And I think it's Deutsche Welle, they noted, synagogues in many German cities receive special police protection, and Yom Kippur, the Feast of Atonement, is the highest holy day in the Jewish calendar. So in Germany, it's usual for there to be police protection of Jewish synagogues. It's common. It has to be there for the safety of the Jews. And when it's not there, like in this shooting, it's a scandal. You know, they're saying, well, they should have known. There should have been protection there. And really, all across Europe now, Jews are behind bars again. Not in concentration camps, but whenever Jews gather in synagogues or schools or other cultural centers, typically they're behind walls, they're behind fences, they're behind gates, they're behind bars. In Paris's main Jewish district, there are French soldiers patrolling the streets. I think it's a testament to the fact that they've already kind of fortified their synagogues, to the fact that this guy couldn't get in with the door barricaded. I didn't see any pictures of it, but it wouldn't surprise me if there are bars over the windows. And so he wasn't able to get in and kill more people. But these kind of attacks have become such a big issue that they've had to do that. I mean, how many other buildings do you know where just all across this type of building, there are bars on the outside of the windows so people can't smash them and get in? Where it's just common to have armed guards, where even in some places you'll have to go through metal detectors to get in. And the other place I can think of that's like that is just in Israel itself, where you have to go through metal detectors and past armed guards to get in things like shopping malls. But for synagogues, that's the new normal now. And some synagogues in Europe's big cities, they spend about a quarter of their budget on security. In some places, in some kind of especially dangerous areas, they're spending half their budget, 50%, just on security. And yeah, it was just this May where German Chancellor Angela Merkel was warning that every synagogue and Jewish school in Germany needs constant police protection. And we saw yesterday why she said that. That was a synagogue that didn't have that police protection. And who knows, maybe this attacker chose that synagogue for that reason. Maybe he had a look around to find one that didn't have that constant police protection. And then for every murder, for every shooting like this, you know, there are thousands more death threats or just attacks on buildings and graffiti or attempts of arson, other anti-Semitic crimes. There have been occasions where Jewish parents have received phone calls where people have been, anonymous calls where people are threatened to murder their children. Jewish drivers, they found notes on their parked cars saying, we're watching you. Jewish pedestrians walking by graffiti saying, well, Hitler had the right idea. And all the stats, everywhere you look in Europe, they're all heading in the wrong direction. In France, anti-Semitic acts were up 74% in 2018 compared to 2017. In the US, they doubled. In Germany, they rose 20%, with violent attacks up 60%. The UK, we've set new records for the largest number of anti-Semitic incidents every year for the last 3 years. So it's just yesterday's news story was just one symptom of a really worrying trend, and one that's worrying for everyone, not just for Jews. I had an article in the Trumpet print a couple of issues back. It's called The One Minority Society Loves to Hate. If you want to know more about it, you can look that up on the website. But that article talks about the events that's happening. I wrote about these trends and some more examples of these trends. One of the things that just really kind of stood out to me was you'd have these Jews moving from France to places like Ashdod, and some of these places that are within missile range of some of the longer range missiles from Gaza. And so they're moving to Israel, they're moving to this country that's under threat of nuclear annihilation from Iran, if they ever get the bomb, which they're always working towards, under threat of rocket attack from Hamas when there's rocket sirens will sometimes sound and they have to go into their shelters, and moving to these places, and then they're writing about how much safer they feel. What a sense of relief it is to be out of France, that their kids can go outside and play and not have to worry. Maybe it's more something that I do, because I tend to be fairly mathematically minded. But you see the stats and you see the number of people killed, and you know, maybe I'll work out the percentages and work out, okay, well, it's only a tiny, tiny percentage of Jews in the country that are being killed. And you know, you can look at those percentages and maybe think it's not a big deal, but that completely forgets about, well, A, all of these other attacks on them that don't get reported as often as the actual murders, but then just the level of fear that spreads through a community. And it doesn't have to be 10% of people being killed, say, which would be massive, before you just get this big level of fear. And then you read about, like I said, those people move to Israel, move to a situation that we might view as dangerous, but no, they say, whoa, you know, it's just a massive relief. It feels so much safer here. We don't have to worry about strangers attacking us. And you start to realize the level of fear there is among many of these communities. But as I wrote about in that article, there's also a spiritual reality behind this. You know, if you believe the Bible, if you believe the Bible is the word of God, well, then you have to believe in a spirit realm and in a devil. And it's certainly not popular in many religious circles to talk about that, but the Bible makes that absolutely clear. There is a devil, and Satan has a special hatred for the Jews. They have a history and a wonderful future with God. And so Satan inspires these attacks, and then attacks like this are growing, and this climate of anti-Semitism is growing. Well, it's an indication of Satan's influence rising in the world, rising in Europe. And that's something that's worrying for everyone, you know, not just for Jews who might be the immediate victims of these kind of attacks. And this article that I wrote, The One Minority Society Loves to Hate, talks more about exactly why and why there are these attacks, why Satan has this special hatred for the Jews. I think I gave a whole program on that a few months ago, but you could look up that program or that article if you'd like to know more. But another story from Germany on it, where you had some attacks generating headlines and fear, came on Monday, where a man from Syria was arrested after a truck plowed into a line of cars. This was in the western city of Limburg. And you know, 8 people were injured, as well as the driver. He was basically, I think the cars were there stationary at a traffic light, and he was in a truck, plowed into them. Now, I think the police have said that, you know, they've not definitively said this was a Muslim terrorist attack. And they've told people, they've in fact kind of urged people not to speculate. But the passersby said the suspect was saying Allah several times. You know, he was from Syria. The public German broadcaster ZDF, they quoted sources saying that it was being treated as having a terrorist background. And you know, the German police, German authorities do have a history of not really wanting to report on terrorist attacks, wanting to play them down, especially when migrants are involved, because they don't want to stoke a fear of migrants. But really, when you look at the facts here, you've got another migrant from Syria committing what looks like very much like a terrorist attack, driving a truck into innocent citizens, a terrorist attack that's very hard to stop. And you can see why this is leading to increasing fear in Germany. And I think the fact that authorities don't want to discuss it, it just leads to more speculation. It leads to more fear, more people thinking, well, if they don't, you know, if you've got something like this and they don't really want to talk about it and they're playing it down and they don't want to get into any terrorist motives, they want to play that down. Well, what aren't they telling us? What other things are going on that we're just not finding out about? And there have been several high profile occasions where the media has caught authorities out playing down or just deceiving people about some of the origins of these attacks. So that's another story to watch for in Germany. I mean, this fear there is going to lead to political change in Germany very soon. You can listen to last week's Key of David program if you want to learn more about that. Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Flurry just really talking about what the Bible prophesies coming up for Germany, the rise of a strong leader to watch for in Germany, a really important Key of David. If you haven't seen that, please do go on our website. You can see that right at the top right on our From the Editor section. But these type of attacks, this type of growing fear is going to lead to an appetite within Germany for a strongman. And that's what that Key of David is all about. But this growing fear of migrants, it's also another part, it's an aspect of this other big story that was kind of alerts piled up on my phone yesterday. And that is Turkey invading Syria. You know, Mr. Flurry talked about this, Mr. Stephen Flurry on the show, I think back on Tuesday, where Syria was getting ready to invade Turkey. Well, on yesterday, I think overnight going into Wednesday, they began their bombardment there. The Turkish president, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, he announced yesterday the start of a long-awaited operation to take control of these Kurdish-held areas in northern Syria. And you know, the Turks, so they've been trying to kind of portray this as a peaceful, mostly political operation. But Turkish TV networks, they've been showing footage of airstrikes and artillery strikes on Kurdish positions. The Syrian Kurdish People's Protection Units. You know, these are the former allies until last week of the United States, the one that U.S. forces were kind of fighting side by side with. They're now coming under aerial and missile attack from Turkey. And Turkish media is also reporting a big build-up of Turkish forces all along the border. So it looks like the artillery bombardment and the aircraft bombardment is kind of there to try and soften up the ground to get ready for Turkish ground forces to go in. There's also unconfirmed reports that Syrian forces with Russian and Iranian backing are also kind of eyeing it coming up from the south into some of these areas. And then Kurdish media is reporting Iran holding an unannounced drill near its border with Turkey. So all the other forces in this area, they're watching. But look here, Turkey wants to create a 20-mile deep, 300-mile long, quote-unquote, safe zone inside the Syrian border. So it's really a significant operation. They're getting ready to take a big chunk of Syrian territory under their control. And then, I mean, the reports vary, but they seem like they're getting ready to move 1 to 2 million Syrian refugees into that area. So Turkey, at the moment, there's about 3.6 million Syrian refugees living in Turkey. So Turkey wants to take this area back and then move those Syrian refugees out of Turkey into Syria. Nicholas Harris, a Middle East expert at the Center for a New American Security think tank in Washington, he says this operation has nothing to do with ISIS or Islamic State. This is about clearing Turkey's border of Kurdish forces. Turkey is selling a lie. Turkey, there's a significant Turkish minority in Turkey's eastern provinces, and some of those Kurds want an independent Kurdish state that could be in Syria, could take some territory from Syria, from Iraq, and the Turks are worried that it would take some territory from Turkey too. So the Turks have been in a long-standing war with the Kurds, trying to make sure that they don't, that these provinces that are majority Kurd, they don't want to see them declaring independence. They don't want to see the Kurds deciding their own destiny. And so they've been fighting the Kurds for quite some time, and now they're bringing that fight into Syria, and then at the same time clearing space to deal with this refugee problem, to take care of these refugees that they've been housing. This is just published just a few minutes ago from Deutsche Welle. It's called Airstrike Shelling as Turkey Advances Against Kurds in Syria. So now there's reports coming in that the Turkish military is advancing against fighters in northern Syria. This article says there were heavy clashes Thursday in Syrian border villages between advancing Turkish forces and Kurdish-led Syrian Democratic Forces, SDF soldiers, in the second day of Turkish offenses in northern Syria. According to an SDF spokesperson, the attacks in the Ras al-Ain area, Our forces confronted a field incursion attempt by the Turkish occupation army on the axis of Tal Alfa and Al-Kuk, the SDF said in a statement. So there's reports of Turkish ground forces going in now. They talked about fierce clashes continuing. And so Turkey said that its offenses are moving on as planned. The Turkish Ministry of National Defense tweeted this morning, said they were shelling targets, positions, weapons, tools, and equipment. Now they They say that they're attacking Islamic State terrorists. They also say they're attacking the Kurdish, quote-unquote, terrorists, that the Turks call the Kurds as terrorists. I think you can argue that most of the Kurdish groups do not meet the internationally accepted definitions of terrorism. They do tend to try and restrict their attacks to the Turkish military and then the heavily militarized Turkish police. So if they don't engage in attacks on civilian targets, by most definitions, they are not, or by the standard definition, they're not terrorists. But Turkey classifies them as terrorists and uses fighting terrorism as their excuse for going involved there. Their defense ministry, they wrote on Twitter, are heroic commandos taking part in Operation Peace Spring, which is just kind of scary. In general, for some of these authoritarian regimes, the more happy sounding the slogan, the more terrifying the reality on the ground. So Operation Peace Spring, they're really going out of their way to make it sound happy and peaceful. You can guarantee it probably isn't. But they're continuing to advance east of the Euphrates. And the Turkish Ministry of Defense, they released footage of Turkish forces advancing overnight, firing. They've been bombing targets in Kurdish-controlled areas, like I said, and now it looks like the ground attempt is coming in. So it's a pretty huge intervention, taking over, like I said, 300 miles wide, 20 miles deep, a big slice of Syrian territory. And as you can tell, I do kind of sympathize a bit with the Kurds. I mean, you can kind of understand Turkey wanting to deal with its million or so migrants and find some, or 3.6 million migrants, find something to do with them. I remember years ago reading an article about the Kurds. It was about a Kurdish city in Iraq, a journalist was traveling there in Kurdistan. I think it was during the Iraq War. But basically, it just talked about how this city, even it had its own McDonald's. Now, it wasn't a McDonald's official franchise McDonald's. It's just the Kurds loved America so much and the Americans so much. They wanted to be like America. They'd seen all the American TV shows and there was McDonald's. McDonald's was American. So they'd copied their own McDonald's restaurant from all of the TV shows. And I don't think the journalist said the food tasted particularly like McDonald's, but the outside and the images and the type of food on offer was all copied from what they'd gleaned about McDonald's from American TV shows. So they've been on America's side for quite a few years, and they always get thrown under the bus. I mean, the British threw them under the bus as well. They didn't. Winston Churchill wanted them to have an independent Kurdish state. They didn't get one, and now it looks like America's pulled out, let Turkey move in, and they're taking over this area. But the main thing we need to talk about is the prophetic implications of this. Is what the Bible says about this and where this is leading, because these could be pretty big as well. Firstly, before I get into that, I just want to bring Europe into this, because that ties very strongly to this, to the biblical angle here, what the Bible says, what we've been forecasting for several years. I'll have a clip in just a minute from the Key of David program talking about exactly this kind of outcome years ago. I think the program was from 2012. But the Turkish president, Erdogan, he told Europe, we'll be forced to open the gates. We cannot be forced to handle this burden alone. And he's talking about the migrants. He's basically saying, well, unless you let us do this, well, we've got 3.6 million Turkish migrants. You know, it caused a big problem when around It caused a big problem when around a million Syrian migrants made their way over to Germany last year. Or 2015, I guess it was, made their way into Europe. Well, it would cause you guys some pretty huge problems if 3.6 million migrants that are in Turkey started making their way into Europe. If you don't let us do this, if you don't let us go into Syria, well, we'll let those migrants loose on you and see how your political systems deal with that stress. And so I think the UK and France have been critical of Turkey's move. They've not done very much effectively. I've not heard anything from Germany, but faced with that kind of threat, you can see why Europe wouldn't do anything effective. And there's the potential here for this to create more migrants that would spread out into Europe, but there's also the potential for this to kind of be the solution to Europe's migrant crisis. Turkey's carving out an area in Syria, And then they plan on bringing those migrants back, sending in 2 million of their migrants back. And maybe even Europe will encourage them to carve out some more, and Europe can send their migrants back. But the reason why this is prophetically important is there's a prophecy in Psalm chapter 83 that talks about Turkey and Syria being allied with Europe. This prophecy in there, in Psalm 83, it talks about an alliance that's never been formed in history. It's a prophecy of a future alliance. And it talks about Germany, which we can prove in our publications Assyria, which we can prove in our publications means Germany in Bible prophecy. And it talks about Edom, which is Turkey. It talks about the Hagarenes, which is in Syria. It talks about them being all allied together. And this is what we've been saying would be the outcome of the Syrian crisis all along, that somehow it would end up in Syria being allied with Turkey and Europe, and they'd be part of this alliance. And so now when we see Turkey getting really involved in Syria, taking a big chunk of Syrian territory, you can see it's getting closer to that prophecy. Here's the clip. This is what Mr. Flurry has said all the way back in, like I said, I think it was right around the start of 2012, might have been a bit of in 2011, but so right at the start of the Syrian crisis, you're saying, well, right now Syria's allied with Iran, but that's not going to last. This is clip one.
But this Psalm 83 indicates that Syria is going to have a break with Iran, that they're going to break away. Now, you don't see much of that in the headlines today, but you do see enough violence there to see where it might be able to do that. But most people don't draw that conclusion. We do, because we've been prophesying it for, well, close to 20 years now. Well, even before that, actually, I'd say more like 40 or 50 years when you go back into the life of Mr. Armstrong, who taught this even when he was doing a work many years ago.
So Mr. Flurry was saying that Syria is going to be allied with Iran. I mean, not allied with Iran. That alliance is going to break down. And in the rest of that show, he talked about how Syria is going to end up allied with Europe. And that prediction was fairly counter to what was happening. You know, during the Syrian civil war, Iran was getting more and more control in Syria. But Mr. Flurry was there saying, no, well, we've said for years, Syria is not going to end up in the Iranian camp. That's not going to be what's happened in the long run. And I think with Turkey getting involved in Syria, we're going to see more and more that prophesied outcome being fulfilled. Well, you can read much more about that in our free book, The King of the South. We'll be more than happy to send that one to you for free. You can read that on our website, thetrumpet.com. Like I said, we're very happy to send you that free copy, or you can read it online if you just go to the literature tab up at the top right, and then you should be able to find it there. If you have any trouble finding it, you can shoot us an email at kpcg.fm. Well, take a quick break. When we get back, I'll give you a Brexit update. We'll talk about some of the significant events going on between Britain and the European Union this week before we get on to one important underreported piece of news. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Herbert W. Armstrong long forecast the arrival of a military superpower in Europe. In a world where European nations can't rely on the United States, one in which they fear Russia and face the constant threat of radical terror, their only hope of survival is to band together. This is what we see happening, and what we see happening was prophesied in your Bible. Request Germany and the Holy Roman Empire to learn about the history of Germany and the Holy Roman Empire and to understand where the events in Europe today are leading. 3,000 years ago, the prophet Daniel explained that at the time of the end, radical Islam would push against Europe. That time is now. We are witnessing the first manifestations of this Islamist push against Europe, and it's leading to a spectacular clash between these two prophesied kings, the King of the North and the King of the South. What does the Bible say about the identity of these two kings? What about the end time? Will everyone be affected by these events? Request our two booklets, The King of the South and Germany and the Holy Roman Empire. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. This is Richard Palmer standing in for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Flurry. Well, we're talking in the first half about some significant events that happened yesterday. But now I want to move on and give you a quick update on Brexit. Some very important events this week. Some events I think that really expose what Europe is doing here with Brexit. Like I said, important events. This is kind of crunch time in some ways. The deadline for a deal, or they want to have the rough outlines of a deal ready to go for a European meeting on the 17th and 18th of October. So that's next Thursday and Friday. And then on the 19th, Parliament will meet. I think it's the first time Parliament's met on a Saturday since the Falklands War, which gives you an idea of the kind of crisis footing that Parliament is on at the moment, where they'll discuss the situation. But what we've had over the last few days... Well, actually, I'll play you... This is a soundbite from an interview, I think, from Euronews, where they're interviewing the Belgian MEP, Gerolf Annemans. And he talks about what... He describes what Europe's tactic has been in these Brexit negotiations. This is clip two.
It has been here in the European Parliament and also in the Belgian press, in the French press, everywhere outside the United Kingdom, it's quite common to talk about eventually sabotage the Brexit and the Brexit process. So the guys that are on the table now about sufficient progress, etc., are guys you should not trust to respect the vote of the British people.
They would obviously come back and say, look, we just want to ensure that the Brexit divorce commitments in terms of money made, the obligations towards citizens in both countries, these are issues which need to be resolved sooner rather than later.
Of course.
Where's the tactic in that? That's what I'm trying... Where is this playing?
The tactic is simple. Postpone, complicate, turn it into a chaos. And then in the end, in some way, try to change the British politics into another referendum or anything like that. So they are now sabotaging the process, postponing the process, make it more complicated, recomplicate and turn it into a chaos.
So what the EU's really been trying to do here is, at least according to this MEP, is delay, to confuse, to try and make Brexit look like an absolute disaster, and then use that to gain some kind of control on Europe, on Britain. Either, and like he talked about, Britain having a second referendum and choosing not to leave. I think for a lot of MEPs, or for a lot of European elites, the preferred solution maybe to have some kind of arrangement where they keep a lot of control over Britain while Britain isn't an official member, where they're kind of a subject to the EU. So that where they keep control over a lot of Britain's laws, etc. But where Britain doesn't have the ability to veto and stop Europe moving on these projects like a European military. So in that way, they get, from their point of view, the best of both worlds. They get to control Britain. They get to get all of Britain's money that Britain subsidizes to the European Union. They get to get a whole load of that without Britain being able to slow down European integration. So they've been working on that. And I think we really saw that exposed recently. You had, I think it was Monday, the UK Prime Minister, it might have been Tuesday, but he was on the phone with German Chancellor Angela Merkel talking about his Brexit deal, his revised deal that he's put forward that is his meant to be an improvement on the deal Theresa May negotiated. And well, what we had here was Europe really moving the goalposts. What the EU has said all along, and they've said, well, what's a big deal for us is we can't have a hard border in Northern Ireland. There's been violence in Northern Ireland in the past, between people that wanted the island divided, people that wanted united. There's no border right now. We need to keep it that way for the sake of the peace in Ireland. That's been their rhetoric the whole time. And so Prime Minister Boris Johnson put forward a proposal that sticks with that and that says, okay, well, this creates no hard border. So Northern Ireland will stay under EU rules in certain areas, things like agriculture, because when you share an island, it's kind of hard to have different agricultural standards. So we'll share, share, and Northern Ireland will submit to some EU rules in some areas, but in other areas where it's not as important, they'll come out of the customs union, they'll remain with the United Kingdom, and we can have checks for that away from the border so that there's no hard border. So there we go, Europe, you know, that solves your problem. You said you were concerned about a hard border. Well, there we go. There's a deal with no hard border. And then also, well, we're a democracy. The European Union talks a lot about democracy. Well, we can't have Northern Ireland submitting to European rules without them giving their assent. That wouldn't be democratic. So here's a process where Northern Ireland can have a vote, and the Northern Ireland Assembly in Stormont will be able to give their, will be able to vote on it and give their assent. And if they don't, well, we don't have their assent, and we'll go back and we'll have to work something else out. That was what he put forward. And, well, the European Union came back and basically said, well, actually, no, we've changed. They moved the goalposts. And Angela Merkel did this on the phone with Prime Minister Boris Johnson, where, okay, well, it used to be we didn't want a border. Well, now she said, according to what was leaked from Number 10, that she said that the UK cannot leave without leaving Northern Ireland behind in a customs union and in full alignment forever. So they basically said, actually, we've changed now. Now our condition is Northern Ireland must submit to European rules for a whole load of these different areas. So you can leave the EU, but you need to leave Northern Ireland behind if you do. And if you don't want that, well, if you don't want not to be separated from Northern Ireland that way, well, all of you have to all stay submitting to EU rules. And it's a massive power grab. This is a clip just from the Greek financial minister, Yanis Varoufakis. He was talking about Theresa May's deal all the way back in May and talking about what an EU power grab it is. And then I think, you know, what Europe's doing now just further underscores exactly what he was saying. This is clip three.
The question from Joel is, who's to blame for where we are now, the fact that we're not leaving tomorrow?
Joe, the answer is really very simple. Theresa May. Look, first, she triggers Article 50 on the basis of red lines that boxed her into an impossibility. And secondly, and that is a crime against logic, she failed to recognize that Michel Barnier, when he announced the two-phase negotiation process, was issuing a declaration of hostilities against the government. She never even saw this coming. Because if I come to you and say, listen, let's have a little negotiation between us. First, you are going to give me everything I want. Secondly, we will discuss that which you want. Now, you're a sensible young man. Clearly, you will say, no, mate. I'm not going to have a good negotiation with you along those lines. Theresa May started that negotiation, and the result was effectively a deal, which I will disagree with my fellow panelists here. Whether you are a Brexiteer or a Remainer, this is a deal that a nation signs only after having been defeated at war. This is not a deal which is fit for purpose for any sovereign country.
So this is something that you normally have to defeat a nation in war before they agree to something like this. And they're trying this again. Douglas Carswell, he wrote in The Telegraph that Berlin, now the real center of power in the EU, has no intention of seeing Northern Ireland escape the backstop because from its perspective, the backstop was about keeping the UK closely aligned to the EU. And he just talks about, well, they calculated that the UK would not be willing to leave Northern Ireland behind. So by holding Northern Ireland hostage, they could keep the EU subject to the Europeans' laws. But they said EU officials have colluded with Remain campaigners to try and overturn a democratic decision made by the British people. These are actions you might expect from hostile states, not allies. From hostile states. There's another quote in here, if I can just find it quickly, where he made some very similar statements talking about how this is, you know, they're trying to get control. You know, they're basically annexing Northern Ireland. He wrote, EU strategy has been to seek the de facto annexation of UK territory. They've done so in order to bind us into a customs union. So it's de facto annexation. That's what they're going for here. Another Telegraph piece today speculated that the EU might even try to topple Boris Johnson. It writes, as extreme as this sounds, it's worth remembering that Brussels and its business of undermining European governments has refused to toe the line. Former Italian Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi maintains that he was ousted at the height of the Eurozone crisis by conspiring EU officials and replaced by a government of technocrats led by Mario Monti. And so now you see Europe, the European Union was openly saying, well, yeah, we were talking about John Bercow. They came out openly and said that yesterday. They're going behind the back of the British government. They're talking to the Speaker of the House of Commons, who that's not a position of foreign policy or a government position. It's meant to just be the referee for House of Commons discussion. But they're going behind the Prime Minister's back. Could they even try and oust him because they don't like what he's doing? But to say, well, Northern Ireland has to remain in the customs union, and it doesn't matter what these people think, we're not going to let them have a vote if the Northern Ireland people, if the Northern Ireland Assembly doesn't like this, well, you know, tough luck, they've got to do it. That, I think, that it's really shocked a lot of people in Britain, and I think it's really exposed the dictatorial nature of Germany and the European Union. And a lot of people are very unhappy with that. Now, I think the European Union has kind of stepped back from that a little bit, and they've rode back from that. But I think it's more, rather than because they want a deal, I think it's more because, you know, they realize how bad this makes them look. And so I think that they're trying to see, well, how can we shift the blame onto to Boris Johnson here and make it look like any subsequent no deal or anything like that is his fault. But it's just a shocking exposition here. And again, it's just really interesting. It comes from Germany. It comes from Angela Merkel. It really shows Germany's dominance of the European Union. And then Germany right there saying, well, no, we don't want to let Britain out. We want to make sure that you're subject to our rules. It's a story that really exposes Europe for what they are and exposes their will to dominate. We'll take another quick break, and then when we get back, we'll go to another segment that also just really exposes this will to dominate. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. During his earthly ministry, Jesus Christ delivered his most pivotal prophecy while sitting on the Mount of Olives with his disciples. The discussion is recorded in Matthew 24. In this mind-staggering prophecy, Christ revealed that a series of crises would erupt on the world scene in the lead-up to his second coming. In fact, Christ prophesied that times would become so bad that unless he intervened, no flesh would be saved alive. To understand the signs leading up to the most wonderful news imaginable, the return of Christ, please request your free copy of Nuclear Armageddon is at the Door. To request the material online, visit our website, thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily radio show. This is Richard Palmer standing in for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Flurry. And this, I mentioned I wanted to talk about a new show that this is not received, a new story that's not received much attention, but I think is really significant. This comes from last Thursday, where the European Court of Justice ruled that EU countries can order Facebook or any other social media site to remove content worldwide. And that worldwide is a major step. They're putting EU national courts, they're giving them jurisdiction over what can be posted on the internet all around the world. They want to control even what people in the United States post on the internet, or Canada, or in the UK. It doesn't have to be just in the UK. I mean, in the EU. They want to control you wherever you are in the world. And when you look at this story, it's critical to remember that Europe does not have the same free speech traditions and protections as America, or even as Britain, which has a long free speech tradition, but doesn't have quite the same constitutional protections for it. So I think we're seeing that eroded more in the UK than we are in the US right now. But many EUs have restrictions that would never be tolerated under America's First Amendment, but they want to control what Americans and others say online. Now, this ruling came after the Austrian Green Party member, Eva Glawisznik-Pajszczak, hopefully she doesn't sue me for defamation for that pronunciation of her surname. But anyway, she said that she wanted posts that called her a traitor of the people, among other things, removed from Facebook, that they were defamatory, and this court case made its way up, and the Austrian courts asked the European Court of Justice for an opinion. And they ruled that national courts could force Facebook to take down existing posts, to block any equivalent new posts as well. So in practice, this means social media sites imposing automatic content filters that will block you from what the European Court of Justice calls illegal information, which is a kind of chilling term. They want to make sure that new posts saying things don't go up. So filters, making sure, okay, if you say this, no, that can't go online. And then enforcing this worldwide. A Facebook spokesman says that the ruling undermines the long-standing principle that one country does not have the right to impose its laws on speech on another country. Thomas Hughes, executive director of the campaign group Article 19, so that this judgment has major implications for online freedom of expression around the world. This would set a dangerous precedent where the courts of one country can control what internet users in another country can see. This could be open to abuse, particularly by regimes with weak human rights records. And the EU courts, they ruled that a post must be taken down even if the content is not illegal in the other country. So the post might be illegal in Austria or in Germany, but not illegal in the US. It's still got to come down. And even the ECJ seemed to notice that they were taking a pretty drastic step here. So they said the courts must adopt an approach of self-limitation. But what this means is there's no check on these courts. No one else to restrain them. So the ECJ just had this little tag on the end while saying, well, you know, European courts, that's a big power we're giving you. So just, well, you know, restrain yourselves. Self-limitation. But can they really be trusted to limit themselves in this massive power grab? I mean, all across Europe, there's really restrictive hate crime laws that have been used to stop legitimate criticism of Islam, have been used to stop people giving the Bible truth about things like LGBT, the LGBT movement. There are blasphemy laws that are on the books in a lot of countries. It's fairly rare, but they've still occasionally been used to outlaw criticism of the Catholic Church in European countries. And so you can see how this ruling opens the door for that to be taken global online. And this is something that Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Flurry has drawn attention to as something to watch, something very important to watch. He gave a Key of David program earlier in the year. I think it was back around April, that rough time. But he was talking about why we need to watch this trend from Europe. He was talking about some recently introduced pieces of legislation back then that begun this trend towards getting control of the internet, where in the name of stopping copyright, the EU wanted countries to put up automatic filters that would preview everything that would go online. And campaigners warned that they could use this to censor what goes online. But here's what Mr. Flurry said back then. This is clip 4.
Greetings, everyone. The internet world is in a state of panic, and many authorities are saying that the European Union is trying to get control of the internet and have already gone very far in doing that. The EU really has already made a decision that invades the home of every internet user and also every corporation and every government. Now, is it really the European Union that's behind this? Well, we have to get more specific than that, because it is actually a dictatorial Germany that is behind this and providing the power. If Germany wasn't in this mix and to make that decision, well, then it wouldn't have happened. That's the way it is. And of course, they are supported by a few other nations that are going to comprise the Holy Roman Empire.
So that was the start of his program. One of the things, we'll play just a short clip just a second, that I thought was really interesting. But one of the things he zeroed in is how this is aimed at America. And I think with this ruling on Facebook going after an American company specifically, and you've seen a lot of, you know, every few months, whenever European countries get low on cash, they fine a Silicon Valley company for a few billion. But when you see this ruling, they're trying to expand their control beyond their borders. And I think you can see the country that has some of the best free speech protection in the world potentially being the target of what they're doing here as this starts to roll out. So here's clip five.
But look, I think the EU internet decision is tantamount to a declaration of war in many ways. It is something that is going to hurt a lot of people, and especially America.
In the Trumpet print article that Mr. Flurry wrote after that, program came out, he wrote, Germany's ambition for the internet should concern everyone, even those who don't have a computer. The EU's behavior on this issue exposes the dictatorial nature of this German-dominated entity. Remember, we are witnessing the manifestation of the spirit of the Holy Roman Empire in the tech world. This biblically prophesied seventh and final resurrection of this empire wants to control the internet. And that's the point that Mr. Flurry made on this program as well. It's all about control. Here's a clip where he talks about that, how they're, you know, you see the nature of Europe exposed. This is clip six.
Here it says, Diego Naranjo, the senior policy advisor of European digital rights, warned that Article 13 of the directive sets a dangerous precedent for internet filters and automated censorship mechanisms. In other words, it's all about getting control. They want to get more control. Even again, way back in 1995, Margaret Thatcher saw what was coming, but people didn't listen. Their own people didn't listen until right now they're pulling out of the European Union. And she said this in 1995, you have not anchored Germany to Europe. You have anchored Europe to a newly dominant, unified Germany. In the end, my friends, you'll find it will not work. You see, they had this European Union, everybody helped to unite them, hoping that they could then anchor Germany and Germany wouldn't be in control of it. But they have gotten control of it. And I mean, even now, economically, they are domineering the European Union. And everybody knows that. And they don't fear it enough.
So this story that we're looking at with the Europe and the internet exposes their desire to control. And what we saw with Britain and Brexit, I think that also exposes this desire to control. And it's a desire that really springs right out of Bible prophecy. Mr. Flurry noted that in trying to dominate this way, the German-led EU is behaving the way the Holy Roman Empire has always behaved. Germany is once again seeking to impose its will on the world. And Mr. Flurry based these forecasts on your Bible, on Bible prophecy. Revelation chapter 17 describes an empire that rises repeatedly in Europe. It calls it a beast. It said that it's led by a woman that symbolizes a church. This is an empire that's ruled Europe under men like Charlemagne, Napoleon, and Hitler. The Holy Roman Empire, this pattern of a push for European unity under the Catholic Church that always wants to dominate. It wants to dominate all it can reach. Revelation 13 describes the same empire trying to enforce its religion, ending freedom of conscience, ending freedom of worship. And this empire is rising again right now under the guise of the European Union. And so step by step, this German-led European Union is seizing control of what can be said online. And it's leading us down a path that will lead to far more despotic measures. Now, you can prove all of this from the Bible, that the Bible forecast this power. You can do that in reading our free book, Who or What is the Prophetic Beast? And like all of this, you can get that on our website. Just go on the Literature Request tab. You can also read the July cover story from our Trumpet print article by Mr. Flurry, Germany is taking control of the internet. Well, I had some more I wanted to talk about, but I'm right out of time. Sam Livingston, I think, will be on the show tomorrow, so please do tune in for that here at KPCG on 101.3 on the FM dial in the Edmond, Oklahoma area, or on kpcg.fm.